Good evening, and welcome to a call to action operation, Restore Military Honor and Valor.
Good evening. I am Vietnam veteran and host Cliff Kelly. It's February 21st, 2021. Executive producer, Glenda Smith. Technical producer, Lady B. Our roundtable panelist, John Jackson, Chair, Democratic Party of Georgian Veterans and Military Families Council. Courtney Driver, Vice Chair, Democratic Party of Georgia Veterans and Military Families Council. Keith Grant, Veterans and Military Families Outreach Coordinator, Biden-Harris Campaign, and served as Veterans and Military Families Director for the Coordinated Campaign to elect John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. This evening discussion is Battleground's Purple is the New Blue. Good evening. Welcome to a call to action operation, Restore Honor and Valor. John, tell us what we need to know about these great people and how we move forward into 2022.
Well, you know, we just did a really big thing here in Georgia, and it is really the people coming together and coming together to defeat an opposition that was undemocratic, like not even pro-democracy itself. Right now here in Georgia, we have a legislator trying to end absentee voting, which is a big way that our military votes. And you can't claim to be pro-military like our opposition in the Republican Party is right now, but try to end absentee ballot voting. And so it's very important that Congress pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to mitigate all the voter suppression that is going to be happening in places where the state legislators are controlled by Republicans. You know, our military depends on it. If we want to continue to still be able to participate in democracy like we just saw, you know, we did a lot in a short amount of time, and we're very proud of the work we did. Georgia, a lot of folks told us that we couldn't do it. Courtney and Keith, I'm sure they've been told many times as I was that, you know, we couldn't turn Georgia blue. And, you know, we came together with so many different groups and coalitions of people, and we made it happen across the state. So I'm going to pass it over to Keith right now and see if he has any input on what just happened and what's going on right now.
Yeah, thanks, John. Cliff, thank you for your service. So, John and Courtney and I are part of the post 9/11 generation of veterans. It's important that we're connected across all generations of veterans. And, you know, what we saw here in Georgia was the product of work of people connecting across generations, across demographics, and across the last several years. You know, for the most part, the media really started talking about Georgia, I think, just in that home stretch, realizing, and maybe a week before Election Day, that Georgia really was in play. Those of us here that have been engaged, you know, and I've been involved at just going back the last couple of years to Stacey Abrams' campaign in 2018, you know, what I saw then were folks that had been doing work on the ground for years, laying that groundwork for that to be a competitive race. And that work continued right after Election Day. You know, folks didn't just go home and give up. That work continued right into 2020. And, you know, my official role with the Biden-Harris campaign started just in those closing months of the campaign, with the focus of just rallying veterans and military families to get out the vote, to contact their friends and neighbors, to contact other voters to get out the vote. But that's just that home stretch of work. It's the year-round work and grassroots organizing that puts a state like Georgia and any state in a position to do what we did. And, folks like John and Courtney, who head up our Veterans and Military Families Caucus here in Georgia, they're going to be doing that work year-round for the Veterans Year now going ahead into 2022. Because that work to win again in 2022, that doesn't start next year. That started yesterday. That started January 6th after our two Senate races were won. And that's really, I think, the lesson Georgia gave the country is that when you're active, you're engaged, and you're working all year round, that's what sets the stage to be able to have such a great result that we had here in Georgia. And, there's still obviously a lot of work still left to be done. I'm very optimistic. Knowing the folks here in Georgia, very optimistic of what the future holds for our state.
Courtney, tell us your thoughts on everything that has occurred in the past couple of months and what the future of Georgia holds.
Yes, I agree with everything Keith and John have said. I would say one thing that I'm very proud of is the fact that we have debunked the myth that the military and veteran vote is primarily conservative. We know that the military is diverse. We know that there's different races, different orientation. We're made up of from different places. And, we've seen now that there are a lot of Democratic veterans and folks in the military. And I just want to say that it's important for us to keep the momentum. We had a very high incentive of getting Donald Trump out of the White House, a president who was disrespectful to our group. And now, we need to keep our veterans engaged in our municipal elections and our midterms coming up in 2022. And it's going to be important for us to keep them engaged and come out again in the next 2 years, the next year.
Well, I think that all that is true. I came to Georgia about 10 years ago. I was still actually in the military. I was finishing up reserve time in the Marines. And one of the things folks were telling me is that Georgia is just not going to flip. And I looked at the demographics of the state and did not accept that. I said, no, there's no way. This is not demographically, it's not a red state. And then there was this quote that folks used to say, demographics is not destiny. And I agreed to an extent, but I disagreed to another extent. We had to mobilize the demographics. We had to make the electorate, the people who vote, look like the actual population. And that is something that Stacey Abrams, decided to really push the state of Georgia to strategically go in a different direction. And that is mobilizing a new coalition. Before that, we were trying to capture a coalition that had left us. And we won in a different way than Bill Clinton won in 1992. And in 1992, the South was still very Democratic at the local levels. It was very Democratic in many places at the local levels, and folks were still voting Democratic. And so you had a coalition that had maybe switched at the presidential, but they were still voting Democratic. What we had to do in the past couple of years with Stacey Abrams really being the most high profile figure embracing this, is build a new Southern coalition of voters. And a lot of these voters were young, they're people of color. And that's what a lot of our military is. A lot of our military are young people and they're people of color. And that is how we won. And I think that, you know, we also had a small amount of people who decided that the Republican Party just wasn't for them anymore because of the anti-democratic direction that they've gone. And I want to touch on that for a second and get back to Courtney and Keith. You have a state legislator in Georgia and in many other states trying to restrict voting and ban absentee ballots. And that's how our military vote. They're registered in their home state, and they will send in an absentee ballot so their voice can be heard. What are your thoughts on the widespread attempts to suppress the vote and how it might affect our military families?
I'm sorry, John, you say me?
Start with Keith.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, you know, the big lesson pushed in 2018 by the Abrams campaign was, you know, you make crazy things happen when everybody shows up to vote. And she showed what was possible when you don't exert all your energy on trying to convince somebody whose mind is already made up on how they're voting, but rather you focus your energy on getting people to the polls to use their voice and cast their vote. And we've seen now in the last several cycles here, record voter turnout in Georgia. When I knew that 2020 was going to be a special year was back in June during the primary for the Senate seat that John Ossoff eventually won. That Democratic primary back in June saw incredible turnout and showed that voters were engaged, they were motivated, they wanted their voice heard, and that was in the early stages of the pandemic, when media attention was not very focused on the race, when, you know, people trying to save their money and didn't really have the money to vote, to donate to campaigns, but they were showing up to vote. And we saw that obviously in November, what happens when we get record turnout, and again on January 5th. So of course now, the losing side of this past election, rather than try to figure out what they've done wrong to, you know, lose support or why their voters stay home, they just want to make it harder for people to vote. And I can't think of anything, you know, more undemocratic than that. But that's the playbook, is to make it harder to vote. And as you said, John, that's going to have a direct impact on veterans and military families. Now, I'm sure they'll try to work around that and make exceptions and so forth, but it still attacks one of the core values that, you know, we fight for. It attacks one of the core rights in the Constitution that, you know, we defend. And it's very undemocratic. It's very un-American. And it needs to be called out and shouted down. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that you only get to vote if you show up in person on X day at X time. That doesn't exist. Voting by mail is a long-standing American tradition. And for veterans and the military community, you know, that goes back to the Civil War. So we have to be very outspoken, I believe, in protecting that right, and not just for our community, but for all citizens to be able to safely cast their votes and not have that right suppressed.
Courtney, what are your thoughts?
Well, we know it's nothing new. Like Keith said, you know, this is their way of, you know, attacking us by trying to suppress the vote. And I think that as long as we continue to focus on voter education and, like Keith said, getting our folks out to the polls, no matter what, whether it's presidential year, whether it's the midterms, whether it's local, whatever it is, we need to make sure that we're constantly engaging and making it as easy as possible for our folks to be able to cast their vote.
You know, I think that this is an important conversation. We have to really, we have to fight it at the state level. But, you know, the fact is we did not perform down ballot across the country. Really, Democrats did not perform down ballot as well as we should have across the country. And that's part of the voter education that Courtney mentioned. We're going to have to do some soul searching on how to win down the ballot. But right now, that's the situation we're in, is that some of this legislation is going to pass. And what we have to do is make sure that we are writing, we're contacting our federal electeds, our congressional House reps, and our U.S. senators. We have the votes. We just need a bill to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, to pass legislation that will hinder these states from suppressing the vote. And I think it's crucial that the Biden administration makes this a priority, that that Schumer and Pelosi make this a priority, and that we get this bill on the floor. We have held President Trump accountable. Now it's time to deliver for the people. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing some voting rights legislation come out of Washington, so the progress for the people doesn't end on what happened with January 5th, and that we can continue to let the people's voice be heard. I think the veteran community is not what a lot of people think it is. You know, I think this election cycle, it was a closer race between the military voter than we've seen in really modern history. And I think that the military has a lot of young people who need to be convinced to vote. There are still a lot of military folks who don't vote. You know, they maybe move all the time. They maybe don't keep up with their registration. I know a lot of folks I've talked to are in that boat. And I think that when more military voices are heard, people are going to be real surprised and where the votes lean, because the military it's people from all over the country, diverse people. And you add in the military families, it's even more diverse. And when you think about some of the prominent military areas in this country, when you think about Northern Virginia, you know, that's all Democratic, and it's one of the most military heavy areas in the country. One of the most military heavy areas in Georgia, the second congressional district, it is represented by Democrats. So I think that there's still a lot that can be done to really amplify the political voice of our vets and military families. Any last words from Courtney and Keith, starting with Keith?
Yeah, Don, I just want to kind of build on that. And, you know, when I would engage with veteran groups back in 2018 during that campaign, I would implore volunteers to do three things. One is, of course, to vote. There are a few things more patriotic, I believe, than exercising that right that we, you know, serve to defend. And as you said, it's critical for veterans to be active voters, and we need to set that example. And every election, we should be voting in. Two is to volunteer. No matter the cause or the candidate, we have to be engaged citizens that set the great example for the communities we live in, when veterans are engaged citizens. And with all due respect to the Navy and the Air Force, those of us in the Army and the Marine Corps know that, you know, there's no struggle ever won without putting boots on the ground. And in campaigns, those are your volunteers that are the boots on the ground that help push you across the finish line. And the third thing is using voice. Because when we don't use our voice, others speak for us, and they may say things that don't actually reflect how we feel. You know, as Courtney alluded to, there's, you know, been this myth that veterans are a monolithic voting block for only one side of the aisle, and it's just not true. we're the most diverse organization in the world, you know, in the military. And we're obviously as going to be as diverse in thought as we are in every other demographic. But this myth has been out there because many veterans are uncomfortable speaking out about their views on social or political issues. That's just being a good citizen to speak out and share how you feel and share your views. That's part of just being a good citizen, and we need to encourage more of that. And I think we really saw a change this past election with veterans being more vocal on how they felt about candidates and being very active in the campaign. And I think that's a good thing for democracy that we continue that.
That's right. And another thing I would really like to see is that we're actively recruiting and training veterans to run, to step up and run for office. Because, I mean, we all know we go through leadership training through the military. And, I mean, just military leaders lead differently and efficiently. And I think we need more of that in our city hall and on the Capitol. And so I would love to see a lot more veterans stepping up and running for office.
Well, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that one thing we understand is leadership. And sometimes, you know, we see a lack of leadership from our elected leaders, and we need folks who know how to do what is right, what is of integrity, and not what's politically expedient. So, yes, we encourage veterans to step up and run for office, but also get help and you know, learn the political landscape and you know, get involved before running is always a good idea. It always prepares you. But yes, I think that the future is bright, and we just have to stay engaged and stay at the table and realize that democracy is not guaranteed tomorrow. So that's all we have. You know, I thank everyone for tuning in and listening. You know, we hope to come back on the show, you know, anytime you need us, anytime you want us.
John, Courtney, and Keith, we have come to the end of the show, and I sincerely thank you for a substantive discussion and for being great panelists. Make sure to keep listening every Sunday night to Wharfcliffe's Take and a call to action, Operation Restore Military Honor and Valor, starting at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on WCPT 820 AM. Everyone have a great week.